magic. As I thought.
Oh, so is that why Lady Von Clare wants to see you?
Probably. This binding stone has been warded against intrusion. An untrained bastion or casual intruder cannot easily activate it. Most likely the bastion who unsealed the binding stone placed the wards on it to prevent anybody from using the stone, unless they were from the Empire. Fortunately, Nathan knew how to unravel most of the protections the Empire used. Falmir and the other nations had uncovered them over the course of the war, as they claimed the bastions and binding stones that had once belonged to the Empire. Later, Falmir did the same to other nations, as the demons destroyed country after country. A few minutes passed as he used a few spells and tricks to connect himself to the binding stone. Yfela watched from the doorway at first, before creeping up next to him. Her tail batted against his legs with every swish, but he couldn't slip out of his focus to tell her to stop. Luckily, he had years of experience with beastkin physically distracting him with their fluffy tails and ears. A single tail brushing against his legs was nothing. Then, success. He dove into the new binding stone and tethered it to himself. Time slowed down around him. A rush of sensations blasted into his body. Cold, freezing cold. Everything was so damp. He felt like he was frostbitten and decaying away, like he had been left to rot in a tundra. Nathan pushed away the sensations from the binding stone before they overwhelmed him. Old binding stones were dangerous, as the world around them was often in such disrepair compared to a normal binding stone that they physically hurt the bastion. Normally, there would be an older bastion coaching Nathan through this, but he didn't need one. Chances are that was what Lady Von Clare's role was. Wait for Nathan to arrive, then let another bastion know that he's ready to have his binding stone activated. She could spend a few days helping the new bastion familiarize himself with his surroundings, and the more experienced bastion wastes less of his time with a newbie. Win-win. But Nathan wasn't a newbie and didn't need help. Plus, he didn't want to waste a day without access to a binding stone. Nathan scanned his surroundings. Then he scanned the power now available to him. Nobody had used this binding stone for centuries, so its reserves were overflowing. He immediately put them to work. The underground area needed to be cleaned up and reinforced. Then the keep repaired, given he and Yfela would live here. Afterward, he'd clean up the rubble and vegetation outside. Only after all of that was done could he rebuild the fortress proper and fortify the pass against external assault. The tasks assigned, Nathan withdrew from the binding stone. Moments later, the keep groaned. Water vanished from the ground, stone shifted, and lamps sprung out from the walls. Yfela jumped. She grabbed Nathan's arm.
"We need to run! It's collapsing!" she screamed.
He held her in place and tried not to laugh. "It's fine. Calm down," he said.
"Eh?"
He briefly explained what he had done while the binding stone did its thing. The stonework appeared to repair itself as magic poured into the keep. His brief explanation turned into a long one about how binding stones used their internal magic stores to control and manipulate reality in their vicinity. He didn't know how much of it sunk into Yfela. "Now I believe we have somewhere important to be," Nathan said. He stood up and brushed off the dust from his uniform.
"Oh, so we're still visiting Lady Von Clare?" Yfela asked.
"Not yet." He frowned. "We need to check on the fortress's demonic portal." Chapter 4. A double-door gate stood in the center of the keep. It was nowhere near the size of the gate from Nathan's fortress in the far reaches, standing only 3 to 4 meters tall. No runes or jewels decorated it. Only a single steel bar held it shut. Nathan placed his hand against the gate and felt magic sealing it shut. The seal felt old, faded. That meant somebody had sealed the portal away long ago, Perhaps even before the fortress fell and the Binding Stone was abandoned. Whatever the case, no demons from the portal had broken into the real world.
Do we need to go through there? We only just activated the Binding Stone. Don't we have ages before any demons invade? Euphala asked.
The portal may already be active. The first step any bastion should take upon claiming a Binding Stone is to confirm the state of the attached portal and whether they need to suppress it, Nathan explained.
Already active? But how?
Nathan stepped away from the gate, realizing he had to explain a few things first. Around him, the keep was being rebuilt by magic. Cracks in the limestone filled themselves in. Staircases folded out from the walls. Sand appeared from thin air and melted into glass. Statues and suits of armor poured themselves into existence from molten metal and liquefied rock. You've been taught that demonic portals activate whenever a binding stone is used by a bastion? Nathan asked. Euphala nodded. Her ears pricked up in anticipation of his next words. Her tail curled behind her back. That's wrong. Well, not entirely wrong. Nathan chewed on his lip as he thought on his next words. If we could keep the demons out by sealing away all the binding stones, don't you think that somebody would have sealed them all away decades or centuries ago? Or that the Watcher Omria would have done so, given the goddess's prime directive is to protect Domar from the invaders? Euphala nodded slowly, but said nothing. Nathan continued. Each binding stone has a portal attached to it, but the portals can activate of their own will. This gate is sealed to keep the demons out, in case the portal does activate. Think of it like insurance, and it keeps demons from invading through unprotected portals. If the portal is active, then a demonic horde may be ready to invade any day now.
Shouldn't we wait until we have an army before we enter, then? What if we're ambushed upon entering?
Euphala's tail shot bolt upright. Relax. If there really was a demonic army large enough to be a threat, they'd have already broken down this gate and invaded, Nathan said, giving Euphala a cheery grin. She glared at him. He ruffled her hair, squashing her cat ears. She darted away, cursing him.
You're so blasé about all of this, she muttered. I don't remember learning half this stuff.
A lot of what you get taught in the academy is watered down so you don't get scared, Nathan admitted. Or the trainers didn't know it, he thought darkly.
You're so much more experienced than I expected. I was told you were a new bastion, so I expected somebody closer to my age and experience, Euphala said.
She froze, including her tail, then looked at Nathan with wide eyes.
Not that I'm not extremely happy that you're my bastion, Nathan. Lord Straub. Bastion.
Call me Nathan, he said, a broad grin crossing his face.
Really? Thank you.
Euphala paused.
So, how do you know so much more than me? We both came from the academy. Everything is so complicated and obscure. But you seem like a master.
Nathan's memory agreed with Euphala that he was a brand new bastion, so he needed a convincing lie. The Euphala from his timeline was a great liar and could keep a secret. He wasn't convinced that the Euphala in front of him was the same. At least, not yet. Fortunately, his memories provided a grain of truth he could rely upon. I am a new bastion, but my father was also a bastion, he said. This was true in this timeline and the last, although neither ever told Nathan anything about the truth of being a bastion. One swore an oath to the Watcher Omria to not needlessly spill many of the secrets of bastions, in order to limit the damage if the wrong people abused the Binding Stones. A twinge of regret ran down Nathan as he remembered that oath and the method he had used to travel back in time.
Oh, so you became one to follow in his footsteps? Euphala asked.
She frowned.
At over 30?
Chuckling, Nathan shook his head. Not quite. I'll tell you the full story later. His memories were still jumbled, and he got the sense that he hadn't become a bastion for the happiest of reasons. People rarely did. For now, they had a portal to investigate. He placed his hand on the steel bar blocking the gate. The magical seal pushed back against him, preventing him from removing it. Nathan applied a gentle push from the binding stone. The seal snapped, and the bar slid free, grinding along a century of rust and crashing onto the stone below. Nathan pushed the gate open. Beyond lay a volcanic wasteland. Fantastically huge cliffs ran along the valley the gate opened into, but they cast no shadow. The ground was rocky, uneven, and lined with finger-wide cracks. An eerie purple light emanated from deep within those cracks, with no obvious source. The rock itself was volcanic in nature, with a telltale glassy appearance and texture, and was a deep, dull gray. There was no sun or moon in the sky, nor any other source of light, but the entire world was perfectly lit. Soft, diffuse shadows were cast directly beneath everything. The sky itself was a hazy red, as if in perpetual sunrise. Only a few demons, Nathan muttered, taking in his surroundings. He wandered into the hellscape and scanned the valley further. Euphala followed behind him, her scimitar out and ready for action.
How can you be so calm walking into hell? She asked, voice low.
This isn't hell, or wherever the demons come from, he said. If it were, they wouldn't need portals to get here. They'd live here. This is a place between worlds, a transitory world of some form. I wish we knew why it connected to our world, or how it sprung up next to the binding stones. In the distance was a much larger clearing with a small mound of dirt and rocks in its center. A trio of goat-headed demons sat next to it, doing nothing in particular. Nathan had never known what demons do when milling about in this world, and he didn't care to learn now. There were two more demons closer to him, standing in the narrow part of the valley. The demons hadn't noticed the new arrivals yet.
So where's the portal? This place is so small, Euphala said.
The portal isn't active, so you can't see it.
I know that much at least, she pouted at him. But I can't even see where it's supposed to appear. Isn't there supposed to be some massive pile of rocks or a spire or something where reality tears itself open?
Nathan wordlessly pointed at the tiny mound in the middle of the clearing. Euphala stared at it for several moments, tilting her head.
Oh, that's it?
That's it, which is very strange.
Isn't a small portal good?
He shook his head. That's not how this works. The demons are always going to invade. It's in their nature. Given this fortress has been abandoned for centuries, there should be some buildup here. Or the protective seal on the gate should have been restored much more recently, after an invasion. Instead, nothing's happened, and the portal is practically non-existent. There were a few possible causes that came to mind in Nathan's head, none of them pleasant. Most of them made little sense given the time period. He had yet to confirm the precise date that he had been transported to, but the fact that this was Euphala's first assignment as champion told him that the invasion of Garrick Pass was imminent. So that meant many of his theories were out by default. He resorted to voicing his thoughts aloud to Euphala. Demonic energy builds up in portals the same way that magical energy builds up in the binding stones. Demons then use it to expand the portal or invade. They clearly haven't done either, as this portal is one of the smallest I've seen, and they haven't invaded because the seal was intact.
That means...
I don't know.
Oh, I thought you knew everything.
Euphala bit her lip. She didn't mean it as a jab, but it sounded like one anyway. He sighed. I can speculate, but knowing something is different to guessing. Something or someone has likely bled the demonic energy off. Maybe a major invasion took place nearby and used this portal's energy. He shrugged. Too many possibilities, too little evidence. The portal was inactive and tiny. Nathan turned and made to re-enter the fortress. A squeak of surprise caused him to stop. Euphela blushed as he looked at her. Shouldn't we get rid of these demons? She asked, fiddling with her sword hilt.
A few demons won't cause any problems.
But,
she mumbled. Her ears flattened against her head, and her tail ran against the ground, picking up dust. Somebody was going to need to give her tail a proper clean after today. It was filthy, and her black fur had lost its sheen.
Fine. You can have your fun, he said.
She perked up and spun around. Before she leaped away, he grabbed her by the shoulder.
But we have something important to do first, champion.
Eh?
Did you forget the most important part of being a champion?
Nathan pointed at himself, then at her.
There's one last step, then you'll be a true champion.
A moment passed, then two. Euphela stared at Nathan in visible confusion. Then her eyes widened.
Wait, you mean...
She cut herself off and gulped.
You're going to grant me a gem?
Nathan blinked.
No, not yet.
Aw.
In time, he said.
Her tail perked back up.
There are four stages to being a champion. You should remember this.
Enhancement, mono gem, duo gem, tri gem. I know. But I hoped you would skip straight to mono gem,
she muttered.
Impossible. A gem won't take unless a champion has enough experience with the power of a binding stone. To get that experience, I must enhance you first. Trust me, this is a significant step.
He smiled at her.
I know. We get enhanced during training.
She scowled at him. Nathan's eyes gleamed. Euphela had gone from nervous and adorable to pouty and adorable, all because he had disappointed her. She was so openly emotional now, compared to the Euphela he knew. Maybe he enjoyed this too much, but this felt like being able to pig out on a buffet after a lifetime of only ever eating food a single plate at a time.
Like I said, trust me. Now, what type of enhancement do you prefer?
Type?
The typical ones are strength, speed, or endurance. They're self-explanatory. Or you can mix and match. More advanced stuff includes focusing enhancements on particular facets of your body, like your legs or enhanced senses.
Nathan paused, noticing that Euphela was staring at him with very wide eyes.
You can also increase the magical side of things, but I don't think you know any sorcery, so best to stick to physically enhancing your body with the binding stone.
This is permanent? She asked.
More or less. Your training enhancements are to prevent you from dying when you fight demons, not to help you slay them. If they gave you a full enhancement straight away, you'd probably get a little overconfident and not train properly. But you're a full-fledged champion now. I need you to be a one-woman army, Euphela.
She mouthed her name after he said it. He realized that was the first time he had spoken her name aloud after the initial greetings.
So, strength, speed, or endurance? He asked.
Wait, now I can only pick those three? She squeaked.
Her ears flattened.
I was thinking about what I'd mix and match, too.
You can change your enhancement at any time until you get your first gem. I recommend you change it up regularly until you know what suits you best, Nathan explained. So stick with the basics at first.
Oh, then speed. I want to chop up those demons into 10 pieces before they can even blink. Like in the stories of the tri-gem champion Tarako and her 9-tail slash.
Euphela grinned at Nathan and bounced up and down on the spot. He grimaced at the mention of the fictional tri-gem champion. Or at least every mystic fox he had ever met insisted that she was fictional, despite the statues and countless stories talking about the 9-tailed fox Tarako and her centuries of exploits.
Speed was a predictable choice by Yafela. It had been her enhancement in his timeline. He was hardly surprised that she chose it this time. Somehow, her predictability comforted him. "Stand still and don't move. This will only take a moment," he said. "It might feel a little funny, but you can't move from that spot. Also, don't try to resist in any way."
"I trained for this. I'm ready, Nathan,"
Yafela breathed out, her voice husky. The pair fell silent. Not even a wind blew past them, as there was no wind in this world. The faint sound of the keep rebuilding itself could be heard from the other side of the gate, as could the distant grunting of the demons farther down the valley. Nathan gave Yafela one last look. She stood still, her muscles tensed and eyes closed. Both her ears and tail stood bolt upright. Her fingers tapped against her leggings. She seemed ready, so Nathan decided to proceed. He dove into his newly activated binding stone, exploring his mental world. There wasn't much to see. In his old timeline, he had connected himself to countless binding stones over his life. Here, he only had the one. His mental world only contained the one binding stone, the tether to his own mind, and the ley lines directly connected to that stone. Plus that strange tether that Nathan still couldn't detect, but that he knew was there. Shrugging off that odd feeling, he concentrated on his existing binding stone. He plucked a spare bit of magic from it and left his mental world. Time resumed. Yafela continued to tap her leg. Her magical presence hovered in front of him, faint but still there. Ordinary people barely existed with regard to magical detection. Nathan suspected the only reason he could detect Yafela so quickly was because she had trained as a champion. That process had increased the magic within her body. Most ordinary humans and beastkin were practically invisible to Nathan when it came to magical detection, unless he cast a dedicated ritual to detect them with his magic or used the binding stone to detect them. Now that he had found her magical presence, Nathan connected his own essence to hers. The moment he made the connection, he felt her mind push back against him. He mentally grasped the magic of the binding stone, just in case he needed it to force the connection. Then she stopped resisting him. Her body relaxed, and a sigh escaped her lips. Over the next few seconds, a sweet scent drifted through Nathan's nose. Yafela hummed lightly. He pushed onward into her essence. Her power surrounded him. It seemed to caress him, welcome him in. In reality, it was a threat. If he misstepped, her power would try to crush him in defense. The binding stone could protect him, but he was still in danger. Eventually, he reached her core. Slowly, he drew on the piece of magic that he had brought with him from the binding stone. Then he cast the enhancement ritual on Yafela. How many times had he done this? Never to Yafela, but dozens to other champions. But in this timeline, this enhancement ritual was his first. That made it special. After a minute, the ritual was done, and Nathan withdrew from Yafela's essence. She stood in the same place as before, but her body was noticeably looser. A cheerful grin spread across her face. Her palms were open, and she swayed from side to side. A light moan leaked from her lips. "How are you doing, Yafela?" Nathan asked, trying to bring her back to reality.
"Fae," she mumbled, staring at him with glazed eyes. "Call me Fae. I don't like being called Yafela."
She didn't? That was news to him. In his timeline, it had been the opposite. Everybody else called her Fae, and he called her Yafela at her request. He hid a frown at the deviation from his memories and nodded. That sweet scent lingered in his mind, slowly fading away. "So how are you doing, Fae?" he repeated.
Getting there," Fae said.
She shook herself out, her tail waving back and forth, out of sync from the rest of her body.
Wow. I can't imagine what that must be like if you enhanced a guy. I thought my books exaggerated things.
A blush crossed her face, but she grinned at him regardless. There's a reason champions are almost always the opposite gender to the Bastion, or at least a matching gender preference, Nathan said dryly.
Gender preference?
I'll tell you when you're older. She scowled at him.
I'm an adult.
That he knew in more ways than one, and he was very thankful for it, given the way his body was reacting to the sweet scent she had let off during the ritual. Of course you are, he said with a grin. He reached out to ruffle her hair. She darted back in a blur, taking several steps faster than he could blink. Then she froze and looked down at the ground.
Oh, my goddess, she said.
She ran forward and nearly bowled Nathan over with her speed.
I'm so fast!
With those last words, Faye became a black blur charging across the valley toward the demons. Nathan pumped some magic into his eyes so he could keep up with her movements. The demons looked up, their massive eyes narrowing and focusing in on the strange blur charging right at them. One of them bellowed, leaping up and hefting an axe the size of a man. Too late. Faye whirled behind him. The hand gripping the axe began to fall, almost in slow motion. The demon's eyes widened. He shouted. Faye's scimitar ripped right into his groin, then tore upward. The demon screeched. Nathan looked away for a second, not wanting to watch what came next. Except the demons kept bellowing, and Faye let out a shriek. Looking back, Nathan saw that Faye's sword was stuck. She rolled back, leaving her scimitar buried halfway up the torso of one demon, who had keeled over in the dirt. The other demon slammed a two-handed hammer into the ground. Each strike left small craters in the rock. A single hit from that would cave in Faye's skull. As a champion, she would survive it, and Nathan had access to basic healing from the Binding Stone, but he didn't want her to take that much damage in her first fight. He reached for the longsword at his hip. Before he could draw it, Faye pulled a dagger from her belt. She darted in, dodged the demon's blow, and slashed open its neck twice. Blood fountained out, but the demon only staggered. Too shallow. Faye noticed. She spun around. The demon turned, hefting its hammer into the air. A human warrior, and even a champion, would have been slowed by a major wound like that. Not a demon. They felt pain, but wounds didn't slow them. Nobody understood why they even had internal organs, given they didn't use them. Puncture a demon's heart, and it fought on, as if it had been tickled. The only way to kill a demon was through sheer bodily damage. Cut them open, slash off their limbs, smash them, blow them up, pelt them with magic. Anything worked, so long as she physically damaged their body enough that they eventually died. Faye hurled her dagger at the demon. It slammed right into its eye, and the demon froze. Then it shouted and charged forward. She scowled, grabbed another dagger, and met its charge. Three charges. That's what it took. Each time, she slashed its chest open and darted aside before it crushed her with its hammer. Eventually, the demon collapsed to the ground, unmoving. After retrieving her scimitar from the gory mess she had made of the first demon, Faye waited for Nathan to walk up to her.
I know, I messed up, she mumbled.
Nathan ruffled her hair. She let out a squeak, her ears pricking up around his hand, before flattening under his attention. This is normal for your first battle. Demons are the primary threat to the world for a reason. If they were easy to defeat, we wouldn't need so many bastions and champions, would we?
I guess not.
Take out the three in the clearing and you'll feel better, he suggested. This fight went more smoothly. Faye didn't lose her scimitar and kept her attacks more reserved. She struck at their limbs, slipping in and out of the demon's reach with her superior speed before they could react. By the end of the fight, she had collected a hand from each one and was sawing off the head of another. "Do you need the head?" Nathan asked as he approached. "I figure a huge demonic goat head makes for a better trophy than some hands, and this guy is the biggest of the lot." Faye grinned up at Nathan. Her face, fur, and hair were liberally covered in blood from the battle. Not that it bothered him. Blood-covered champions were a common sight. If anything, this was a nostalgic sight. He had first met Faye in the aftermath of her slaughtering countless demons. She hadn't been so cheerful about killing demons back then, however. "We'll find somewhere for you to put it. For now, let's head back and clean up," he said. Faye looked at him in confusion, then at herself. "Oh, right. Clean would be good." Then she followed his gaze, and her eyes landed on her tail. Her scream echoed throughout the empty valley. Chapter 5.
Right there. I want to feel your hands, Faye moaned. Her voice was sweet and breathy. She let out a low moan during the next stroke from Nathan. Where did you learn to brush tails like this?
I've had some practice, Nathan muttered. Years on this tail in particular, in fact. Faye might be over a decade younger, but her tail was unchanged. Faye arched her back and let out another moan as he moved his hands down her tail to the next segment he needed to brush. Her eyes glistened as she stared back at him, her tongue sticking out, and strings of saliva still connecting her lips. Her reactions were far more exaggerated now, however. Nathan swallowed and looked away from her in a vain attempt to quell his hardening erection. How many times had he seen her like this when she was older, back in his old fortress? How many times had he lain with her, then enjoyed her playfulness afterward? Never again, an icy voice in the back of his head said. He remembered that night, the feeling of reaching out for Yphela and the rest of his champions, and finding nothing but emptiness.
Nathan, are you all right? Faye asked.
Snapping out of his thoughts, Nathan gave her a soft smile. It's fine, just lost in thought.
They didn't seem to be nice thoughts, she said.
Her hand drifted over his, but didn't touch it. True enough. He didn't have to worry about his erection anymore, at least for the next 5 seconds, before Faye let out another sweet moan. Just relax, Faye. This will be over soon, he said, changing the subject. She pouted.
I don't want it to be over soon.
The plan had never been to brush her tail, but she had been so pathetic that he had foolishly offered to help. She likely thought he would simply help her comb out the worst knots, or maybe she wanted some companionship. Instead, she got the treatment of a tail-grooming master, if Nathan didn't say so himself. He pushed her into the shower, given she wouldn't stop marveling at the sight of her newly constructed and furnished bedroom suite. Now she was sitting on a thick velvet cushion in her underwear while he brushed out her hair and tail. He had never expected to get so close to her so quickly, let alone like this, but Beastkin desired physical intimacy more than other races. Once he finished, Faye threw herself on her bed. She sank into the soft mattress with a groan of pleasure.
I've never had a bed this soft, she said, eyes closed. Nobody said Bastions could create such amazing furnishings. Everywhere else I go is so plain by comparison.
Nathan raised an eyebrow. This was one of the few things his master had taught him in Falmir. He had little positive to say about his training as an apprentice Bastion, but he had learned to craft some very impressive furniture. Being able to conjure up whatever expensive materials and objects he wanted was freeing for Nathan. Perhaps that meant he had wasted a little bit, or perhaps a lot, of energy from the Binding Stone on luxuries and aesthetics in the keep. But he planned to live here and use Garrick Pass as a base of operations for some time. Why not make it a pleasurable experience? Therefore, he filled the hallways and open spaces with ostentatious statues, gilded decorations, and decorative suits of armor. Nathan had set aside a small chapel for the Watcher Omria, even if he couldn't bring himself to enter it. He'd even used his power to help Faye mount her demon's head on the wall. The bedroom suites contained massive beds, bathrooms using plumbing technology that Nathan wasn't certain had been invented yet, and ornate rosewood furniture. "Enjoy it as much as you like," he said. "Use today to explore or settle in. I need to spend some time with the Binding Stone."
"Oh, Bastion stuff. See you later."
Faye waved to Nathan as he left the room. He spent the rest of the day and most of the morning in a reconstructed office. Unlike most rooms in the keep, this one had survived the centuries relatively intact. Signs of temporary habitation were also present, namely an up-to-date map of the region which allowed Nathan to get a more accurate grip on the world. His memory was good, but he had been a newbie Bastion when the Empire fell. Most of his knowledge came secondhand. The books and maps in the room had been preserved with magic, and a touch from the Binding Stone allowed Nathan to restore them enough that he could read them. Not that he could restore faded ink. The Binding Stone could repair dried paper, cracked spines, and prevent a scroll from falling apart when he picked it up. But it couldn't fill in a word where one had been written centuries ago. Nathan's next step was to assess the current state of the ley lines. The Binding Stone allowed Nathan to monitor the flow of magic in the surroundings, which an experienced Bastion could use to detect the movements of sorcerers, champions, or demons. Right now, there were potential signs of all three, which made little sense to Nathan. Perhaps his detection skills had gotten rusty. He couldn't remember the last time he had used them on something that wasn't a demon. Maybe he had misinterpreted something. But what he knew was that there was a large draw on the ley lines to the east, beyond Garrick Pass. That felt like a powerful sorcerer actively using a ley line to power their magic. But there were also signs of champions around there, if very faint. Too faint for a champion to be actively present. Closer to home, something felt wrong with the ley lines. The flow of magic was disturbed, and that almost always meant demons. This disruption further affected Nathan's ability to monitor this side of Garrick Pass. For all he knew, champions had been active here as well, but the ley line disruption covered their tracks, which, again, made no sense to Nathan. The portal was inactive and tiny. Demons might overflow to the neighboring region if the portal was actively overflowing with demonic energy, but that wasn't the case.
"Oh, is this your office?"
Faye interrupted. She poked her head through the open doorway.
Am I interrupting? You look deep in thought."
"No, it's fine. I have an open door policy." Nathan waved his hand at the doorway, which didn't have a door. Faye tiptoed in, her brow furrowed. She stared at the doorway. Then it clicked.
Oh, it's a pun. You literally have an open door," she said. "Huh, I thought you were the serious type, but..."
She trailed off into inaudible mumbling. Nathan waited patiently, leaning back in his chair. A large table sat between the two of them. On top of the table was the map he had found in here, which was dated 407 OA. The OA stood for Omnia's Ascent, and referred to her disappearance from the Anfeng Empire. Nobody knew where the goddess went, but it marked the beginning of the decline for the Empire. The Empire had fallen in mid-408 OA. This map was almost up to date and reinforced Nathan's assumption that he was reliving the days that led up to the fall of the Empire. "Anything interesting on the map?" Faye asked. She stared down at it. The map depicted only the eastern border region of the Empire. It went as far north as Forzel Valley, and ended just south of Garrick Pass. The capital, Alaik, was visible at the westernmost edge of the map. Apparently, the Empire thinks it controls land on the other side of the pass, Nathan said, pointing at a small region of land on the far side of the Garrick Mountains from their current location. I'm worried we'll be responsible for defending that. Perhaps our Lady Von Clare will know more.
You want to visit her? Faye asked.
Shortly, yes. I'd feel more secure in a few days, once the walls are repaired. The Binding Stone had finished clearing out most of the courtyard, but its reserves had finally run dry. Nathan had turned his attention this morning to drawing in magical energy from the ley lines, and would set the Binding Stone back to work in a day or two. Until then, Garrick Pass was unprotected. The keep was fully repaired and fortified, but it was far less defensible without an exterior wall. Nathan would have liked to block off the pass itself, but he lacked the champions to defend such a long line of wall, assuming he even had the time to build it in the first place. Suddenly, a trumpet cut through his thoughts. The note was short, but piercing.
Champion! Bastion, are you here?
A voice shouted from afar. The trumpet blew again. I think somebody wants us, Nathan muttered. He rose from his chair and investigated the disturbance. By the time they reached the entrance of the keep, the trumpet had blown three more times. Each time was further apart, but the shouting became incessant. Nathan wanted to leave the nuisance be, but there was only one reason somebody rides up to a bastion's keep and requests their presence like this. Well, two reasons. But the person blowing the trumpet would have been less panicked if he was here to summon Nathan on behalf of Lady Von Clare or some other noble. I'm here, soldier, Nathan called out, as he pushed the keep's gates open. A man wearing an Empire uniform sat on horseback in the courtyard, riding around in circles. Most likely a private soldier, given he lacked the emblem of the Emperor. Maybe one of Lady Von Clare's men?
Are you the Bastion? The soldier called out.
I am. Nathan Straub. You're one of Von Clare's men?
Nathan asked.
Yes. I'm so glad you're here.
The soldier closed his eyes for a moment, and his horse whinnied nervously, picking up on the mood of its rider. He stroked the horse's neck.
Calm down, girl. It's fine.
You're in a hurry. I take it you need help, Nathan said.
Lady Von Clare formally requests your aid, Bastion. She understands you only just began your posting.
The soldier's eyes lingered on the gleaming keep behind Nathan. He surely knew it had been a ruin not long ago.
Leave the formalities for your lady. Where do I need to go?
The soldier stared at Nathan. He opened his mouth to say something, then closed it. His horse tried to move forward, but he pulled her back.
Trantia! Lady Von Clare is under siege at Trantia. Please help her, the soldier said. I need to keep going, Bastion. Lady Nair must also be told of this attack.
Nair?
You mean Vera Nair, the sorceress? Nathan probed.
That's right, Bastion. I'm sorry, but I must be off, the soldier shouted, already riding down the pass.
The soldier's figure vanished from sight while Nathan and Faye watched. His horse was fast, and possibly enhanced with magic.
Trantia? That's too far on foot, Faye said. He must have left hours ago to get here so fast. And the carriage left last night.
The horseless carriage ran automatically on magic. The spell commanded it to return to the capital after dropping Nathan off, so it had. That left Nathan and Faye with no immediately obvious transportation methods.
Maybe not ours. That horse is fast, and Trantia didn't look that far away on the map, Nathan said.
I'm more curious why Lady Von Clare is sending a message to a famous sorceress by horseback. Surely she has some means to contact the region's protector using magic or some faster means.
Protector? I thought you said that's our job. Faye protested.
It is, but Nair's a fairly well-known sorceress. We can work with her, he said.
When the Amica Federation had attacked the Empire from behind, Nair had been the only line of defense the Empire had at Garrick Pass. She had gone down in history as a sorceress who fought until the end for her country.
Naturally, she lost, and the Empire was destroyed. But her name had lived on through almost every retelling of the fall of the Anfeng Empire. In Nathan's mind, she was a comrade fighting to stop the end of the world. In any case, let's worry about that later. For now, there's a town under siege. Hopefully things haven't gotten too bad, Nathan said. He reached for the magic of the Binding Stone.
Should we really go by ourselves? If they need this sorceress and Lady Von Clair's soldiers can't handle it, then can we?
Faye asked, eyes wide. Nathan ruffled her hair. You're new to being a champion, but consider this to be your first actual mission. Chances are the attackers are only bandits, and anything less than an enemy champion, sorcerers or demons, are too weak to threaten us anymore.
Really?
Really. You'll understand that once you crush your first bandit army single-handedly, he chuckled. Ignoring her pout at his dismissal of her worries, Nathan drew on the Binding Stone. It was low on power, but he only needed a tiny amount. He cast his hand out, and white sparkles drifted out. Where they landed, a pair of metallic horses sprung into existence, seeming to unfold into this world from thin air. The horses were made entirely from steel. Empty space filled voids between overlapping plates of metal, and they had no actual heads. These were metallic automaton horses, rather than real ones. The Binding Stone lacked the power to summon living creatures, as it couldn't create or destroy life directly. So almost everything Nathan summoned was some form of metallic or earthen creation. Faye stared at the summons with wide eyes. The horses stood perfectly still, even as Nathan mounted one.
Are you coming? He asked.
I don't know how to ride, she whispered.
With a flick of his wrist, Nathan unsummoned the other horse. Faye flinched and looked down at the ground.
Faye, he said. Faye, look at me.
She looked at him, saw his outstretched hand.
Are you coming? He asked again, holding his hand out. We have a town to protect.
She took his hand, and he pulled her up onto the horse in front of him. A moment later, the horse took off toward Trantia. Chapter 6. Dense thickets of pine trees lined the road to Trantia. The forest floor was a thick bed of fallen pine needles, shrubberies, fallen trees, and rocks. Only the road was clear of debris, and tree trunks lined the forest path to keep forest debris and water clear. Nathan scanned his surroundings while his automaton horse barreled forward at a full gallop. The horse took care of itself, so his mind was free to focus on other things. A small part of his mind focused itself on the squirming beastkin girl holding on to him for dear life. Her warmth bled into him, and he felt the constant pressure of her body pressing against him. She was a pleasant distraction. The rest of his mind concerned itself with disparities between what he thought he knew about the Empire and what he observed. This area hadn't been heavily populated or worked for centuries. Somebody kept the dirt road clear, but the forest showed no signs of human activity. If Nathan tried to run through the forest, he'd trip over within seconds and crack his head open. Nathan was no expert on trees, so he had no clue how old these pines or the forest itself might be, but he knew that most forests weren't this dense. Any nearby villages and towns would need wood to fuel their homes and industries. There couldn't be many people living nearby then. No wonder Garrick Pass had been left abandoned for so long. There was nobody to protect. This was the wilderness. He'd been sent to the boonies. The ride took less than an hour. The fact the horse didn't slow down or rest at all made the trip extremely fast. A small town loomed in the distance.
No smoke plumes, Nathan said. They haven't done anything to the town yet. Let's find a vantage point.
With a mental nudge, Nathan directed the horse to a nearby hill. The forest thinned out and vanished well short of the town, and the pair had passed a couple of tiny villages on the way. Now the terrain was flat and open. Any besiegers could see Nathan and Faye coming without even trying. Trontia looked to be intact. A wall surrounded the entire town, and Nathan could see undeveloped space within the town. Whoever had designed the wall had planned ahead. Or perhaps they had overestimated the growth of the town. There wasn't much to see. A large manor house, a town hall far too large for the size of the town, a mishmash of houses built in wildly different eras. Nathan reckoned some buildings were as old as the Empire, and others younger than Faye. A shimmering blue dome hung over the town. "Does every town have that?" Faye asked, pointing at the magical barrier. "Border forts and towns, usually," Nathan replied. "Cities use a more limited variation in their walls."
"Why only at the borders?"
"Memories of refugees fleeing burning towns and armies wiped out overnight in state-of-the-art fortresses came to Nathan's mind. The demonic hordes had shown little respect for the wondrous power of sorcery. "Barriers are a fairly new technology. They haven't been tested or made economical yet," Nathan said, telling a half-truth. This was the reason a normal bastion would give, someone who hadn't seen the barriers fail in the future.
"Econo," Faye blinked. "What?"
"They cost too much to be worth it for now. The Empire would go bankrupt building them everywhere." Faye nodded. Nathan didn't remember her being so uneducated. She was cute, but he couldn't help but want to teach her all the things she had known by the time he had met her in his timeline.
"I guess that's why those bandits haven't broken in," Faye said, pointing at the mob of the people camped outside the walls. "There's so many of them."
"Really? That's your reaction to that tiny group?"
"Eh?"
Nathan hid his smirk. If he smirked too much, he'd come across as condescending and arrogant to Faye, and he wanted her to like him. Hopefully, love him, eventually. "What was the last thing you told me before we left?" he asked. Faye paused. She held a finger to her lips for several seconds. Then she nodded.
"I don't know how to ride," she said.
Nathan glared at her. "Before that?"
Something about how dangerous it was, because Lady Von Clare's soldiers couldn't handle the bandits?
"Exactly. Now, how many bandits are there, and how many soldiers do you think Lady Von Clare has?" Nathan asked. He waited while she counted the bandits one by one, then stared blankly at the town. Almost a minute passed. They were lucky that the bandits weren't on the lookout for reinforcements. Or maybe the bandits assumed that a single horse with two riders was too insignificant to worry about, given how far away Nathan was sitting. Both he and Faye had enhanced vision. He used the binding stone to see farther, and Faye's beastkin senses were vastly superior to a human. Where the bandits could barely make them out, he and Faye could see the fine details of the bandits and their camp.
54 bandits. Maybe a few more I can't see in the tents, Faye said. I know Lady Von Clare has at least that many soldiers. Don't soldiers come in companies of 100?
It's her private army, so she can have as many as she likes in a company. But normally, yes, Nathan said. What does that tell you?
She should have sent her troops out to crush the bandits. I don't see any signs of battle.
Which means a few possibilities. Nathan began ticking off fingers. This is a trap intended to lure us or Nair in. The soldiers either aren't here or are terrified of the bandits, which I feel is unlikely if we're being called to help. Nathan held his last finger up. Or, most likely, the bandits have a sorcerer of their own. It only takes one to upset the balance of a battle, and it explains why Lady Von Clare's soldiers are hiding inside the town.
They're that powerful?
Compared to us? No. Compared to ordinary soldiers? Absolutely. A sorcerer's spells punch through steel plate, melt flesh, and harm dozens at a time. Even if her soldiers win, Lady Von Clair may lose half of them, and the bandits may simply retreat. Then they attack another day, and she has no soldiers left. Nathan shrugged. So what is she to do? Ask us for help? Exactly. Even if this is a trap, there's still likely to be a sorcerer present.
So this is a real battle, then? Because there's a sorcerer? Faye asked.
More so than I thought, Nathan said. He dismounted the horse. Faye watched him, remaining precisely where she was, her hands gripping the reins tightly. With a thought, Nathan commanded the horse to lower itself to the ground. Faye screamed as the horse dropped, pressing herself against its neck. When nothing happened, she poked her head up and looked around. Oh, she giggled and jumped off the horse. The bandits continued to mill about outside the town. A handful of tents sat roughly 100 meters from the walls, and a construction site was directly opposite the gatehouse. Open wagons loaded with logs sat next to the construction site. A half dozen laborers were nailing the logs together into a frame. At the front of the site was a large hunk of misshapen steel. A battering ram. Normally, it wouldn't be able to break through the magical barrier, but with the help of a sorcerer, it could. We'll take out the ram first, Nathan explained, pointing out the construction site. I can't spot the sorcerer from here, so we'll need to look for one once we've drawn their attention. Once you spot him, dash in and take him out. I'll cover for you.
Against 50 bandits? Faye squealed.
I told you before, it's not the bandits that we need to worry about. Don't worry about them. Nathan gave her a grin and ruffled her hair. She ignored his attempts to boost her morale.
There's over 50 of them!
This conversation wasn't going anywhere. Faye needed to experience her power firsthand. Nathan raised his hand and pointed his fingers at the battering ram's construction site in the distance. In his mind, he found the nearby ley line. He could use the binding stone's power, but the farther away from it he was, the more expensive it became to use. Meanwhile, there was a ley line immediately beneath him. As Bastion, he had a direct connection to this ley line through the binding stone. Plucking a thread of magical energy from the ley line was trivial, and Nathan turned his attention back to reality after a few moments. A pair of glowing orange squares snapped into existence around his outstretched wrist. Burning runes scrawled themselves into the surrounding air, embers of light drifting off into the rays of the afternoon sun. Nathan pulled power from the ley line and pushed it into the spell in his hand. The air shimmered with the intensity of the magic being cast. The runes became blindingly bright, too bright to read. Faye shielded her eyes, but still tried to watch, her mouth wide open in shock. Shouts rose up from the bandit camp. Nathan closed an eye and tilted his head to one side. With his spare hand, he placed it over his open eye. He adjusted his hand, lined up his spell, and unleashed the power contained within it. The battering ram vanished, vaporized. Plumes of dirt, dust, wood, and ash rose dozens of meters into the air. Flames roared out from within the explosion. The shockwave flattened the closest tents and knocked bandits off their feet. Rocks and massive hunks of earth crashed down, taking out other tents. A bandit went down when a chunk of wood punched a hole through his chest. Dismembered limbs began to fall among the debris. That should get their attention, Nathan said. He lowered his hand. Head down there and see if you can't find the sorcerer. I'll back you up. Faye turned her head back from the screaming chaos of the bandit camp to look at Nathan. Then she looked back at the bandit camp. She closed her mouth and swallowed.
Yes, sir, she murmured.
Was that a little too much for his first spell? Nathan wondered. He'd kept the explosion fairly restrained compared to the amount of power he had drawn upon. Most of it had gone up or down to provide a theatrical effect. He was fighting bandits, not an enemy champion or demons. Faye charged down the hill. Her pace sped up after the first few steps, and she soon kicked up a cloud of dust as she sprinted toward the bandits. A few dozen bandits gathered themselves in groups. The closest to Faye stared at the approaching dust cloud, transfixed. Her scimitar tore through them before they reacted. Their bodies hadn't hit the ground before she flipped over their heads toward the next group. Blood mixed with the dust she left in her wake, and her scimitar gleamed red. A collapsed tent went flying, and a giant stepped out from beneath it. His armor was battle-scarred, but Nathan made out old markings of the Imperial Army on it. The breastplate fit too well on the man's gargantuan figure, so he had to be a deserter. Bandits couldn't afford tailored steel plate, especially when they're that huge.
"It's just one girl, you buffoons," the giant yelled.
Nathan relied on his enhanced hearing to overhear the shouting.
"Surround her so we can get her properly."
Properly? That sounded bad to Nathan's ears. He guessed the giant to be the bandit leader, or close enough. Sliding down the hill, Nathan checked for any active magic. A wise sorcerer didn't scan for magic in the middle of a battle, given the focus it required. But Nathan wasn't in danger for the moment. If he found the enemy sorcerer first, he could end this battle before it truly started. Before he found anything, a series of yells brought him back to his senses. A crossbow bolt slammed into the ground next to him. Another hit him dead in the chest. The bolt snapped on impact and fell to the ground. Pain fountained out within Nathan for a few seconds, as if somebody had punched him very hard in the chest. Given a crossbow capable of penetrating steel plate had hit him, he wasn't complaining about a little pain. The magical protection the Binding Stone gifted him made him nearly immune to non-magical attacks, but they still hurt. And enough physical harm could kill, like having a fortress fall on top of his head. The yelling stopped. Nathan looked over and saw five bandits. Three of them had stopped mid-charge, axes raised. They wore leather armor and chainmail. Behind them were two more bandits with crossbows. All of them stared at him, eyes wide and jaws dropping. Nathan raised an arm. A glowing triangle appeared at the end of each fingertip of his hand. The bandits tried to turn and run. With a snap of power, Nathan blew a fist-sized hole in the torso of each of the five bandits. He didn't wait to see if they were dead. Ordinary humans couldn't survive a hole where their heart should be. The ground rumbled. Nathan cursed, realizing he had forgotten his primary objective. An inferno of flames rose up in a straight line from the middle of the bandit camp. Faye was nowhere to be seen. Bandits scattered from the blazing fire, unsure if they were under attack by a third enemy. Their tents burned, and soon the inferno engulfed the entire clearing. Nathan ran toward the flames. As the original blast faded into ash and smoke, Faye came back into view. She had her arms crossed in front of her, eyes closed, and tail tightly wrapped around her torso. Opposite Faye was another woman. Her figure wasn't entirely clear through the smoke and haze, but she wielded a greatsword almost as big as she was.
"Faye, counterattack her!" Nathan shouted.
Faye's eyes snapped open. She looked down at herself. Pieces of her clothes fell off her body in ashen tatters, and her armor was blackened by something other than paint. But she appeared physically unharmed. She looked at the woman opposite her and grinned toothily. The two swordswomen traded blows. Faye struck at every weak point she could reach. She dove behind her opponent and cut at her ankles. Despite the unwieldy size of her sword, the bandit swordswoman kept up with Faye's magically enhanced speed. As the smoke cleared, Nathan saw why.
A glowing red hexagon hovered over the crossguard of the bandit's greatsword. While looking at it, Nathan felt the power slowly filling it up. This bandit was a powerful sorceress. The inferno from earlier hadn't been caused by a sixth-rank spell, which the hexagon denoted. Maybe a fourth-rank spell at most. If this girl unleashed a sixth-rank spell, the power would level the entire clearing. Shattering the barrier wasn't even a consideration. Half the town would vanish in an instant, and the rest would be turned to ash in the ensuing blaze. And Nathan knew she was casting a fire spell. After all, he recognized the woman holding the sword. A young woman with short brown hair, who looked just shy of 20. Her cloak covered up most of her figure, but he knew what she looked like. Petite, short, lithe, toned muscle, tanned skin, and blazing red eyes. No, not red eyes. Not yet. He didn't know her natural eye color. Sen, Nathan murmured to himself, stopped in his tracks for a moment. He was fighting against one of his champions from his old timeline, and a former lover. Sen's eyes locked with Nathan's for a moment. Green. Her eyes were green. He memorized that fact. Suddenly, Sen dropped her sixth-rank spell and darted back. She raised her sword. A red triangle appeared at its tip. Fay raised her guard, recognizing an incoming spell. Nathan raised his hand and cast a protective barrier in front of Fay. An instant later, Sen crashed into the glowing silver wall. An explosion burst from her sword. Nathan lost his view of Sen in the smoke. "Pull back!" Nathan shouted. He reached for the binding stone and pulled a chunk of magic from it. He didn't plan to use it, but Sen was a much more talented sorceress than he had expected to fight, and he refused to kill her. Fay glanced back at Nathan in confusion for a moment. His message got through a moment later, and she leaped backward. Drawing on the magical power he had just gathered, Nathan began to cast a fourth-rank spell, and a square appeared around his hand. He raised his hand, palm upright, toward where Sen had been moments later. The moment the dust from the explosion cleared, he looked for Sen. "Found her," he thought. He clenched his fist. Sen's eyes widened. She immediately stabbed her sword into the ground. Magical power poured off her, but no magical shapes appeared around her. She was trying to brute force her way out of his spell. The earth exploded upward around her. Like a fist of hardened earth closing over her, Nathan captured her in his prison. Dust filled the clearing. All Nathan smelled was dirt. The bandits cursed and shouted, trying to run away. The bandit leader was close, shouting Sen's name. That confirmed that Nathan was right, as if he needed the confirmation.
"Derek, get everybody out!" Sen shouted. "Please!"
Nathan blinked. She'd escaped? An enormous hole had been blown in the enclosed fist of hardened earth. Nathan saw no signs of fire or charring. The only answer was a raw blast of wind. But Sen could only use fire magic in his timeline. No. Again, like with his memory of her eyes, that was wrong. Nathan shook his head. Sen wasn't restricted to fire magic yet. He cursed his faulty memory and assumptions.
"There's just the two of them, girl," the bandit leader, Derek, shouted back.
"Do you want to die?" Sen screamed. "He's a bastion and a better sorcerer than me. Run!"
Those words had the bandits running for the hills. Sen had instantly realized what Nathan was, and probably what Fay was as well. But the bandits hadn't. Many people reckoned they could take a sorcerer down if they had the numbers. There were plenty of stories of brave knights and soldiers overcoming evil sorcerers and the like. The army even recruited less capable sorcerers, and there were plenty of people who thought they were a sorcerer because they could heal a scratch or help crops grow. But everybody knew the legends of the bastions. There weren't any stories of a brave group of bandits defeating a man with the power to hold off legions of demons. Sen never turned her back on Nathan as she retreated. She kept her sword raised. Her eyes were wild, terrified. Nathan grimaced as he watched her withdraw. He could stop her, he knew. He didn't know if he could stop her without hurting her or killing her.
Is it all right to let them run? Fay asked.
They seemed a lot stronger than you said they were. Or she was, at least.
She's a spellblade, so that's to be expected, Nathan said.
The barrier over the town winked out. He heard noises from behind the gate. Presumably, the guards were checking that the bandits were gone and that it was safe to come out. Nathan walked toward the gate.
Spellblade? What's that? Fay asked.
A sorcerer talented with both sorcery and weapons. Many champions can take out a normal sorcerer by getting up close, because sorcerers don't fight in melee. Instead, they bombard you from afar. But a spellblade is dangerous at all distances, and often more dangerous up close. Nathan waved a hand at the burning ruin of the bandit camp. Think of them like the sorcerer equivalent to a champion. I'm a spellblade, for reference.
Oh, I was going to ask. I knew you could use magic, but didn't realize you were a proper sorcerer, Fay said, grinning stupidly. You were so cool. Nobody told me that bastions used sorcery like that.
Most can't. All bastions need to understand sorcery, or else they won't be able to use the binding stones. But most don't have the talent to be sorcerers. Nathan shrugged. I'm not an especially good sorcerer, but I know a lot about the theory, and I have more raw power than most sorcerers, thanks to the binding stones.
Not good at it? Fay said.
She looked at the nearby crater and the house-sized fist of hardened earth. She raised an eyebrow, but changed the subject.
And when do you use your sword? You said you're a spellblade. Like that woman from earlier.
The gate creaked open. Close to 100 soldiers trooped out through the doors. Each wore the same uniform as the rider who had come to Garrick Pass. I'll use my sword when we fight an enemy who needs me to, Nathan said. Fay blinked and tilted her head.